Welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And you've been working on trying to secure our network. And one of the things that you're doing is trying to learn OpenVAS. Last week, you got it installed. You did some things with it. What are you doing with it this week? Or what have you done since then?
Yeah, so last week, we talked about why we need a vulnerability scanner. And then I talked about installing OpenVAS. Mm-hmm. And this time, I was able to get OpenVAS to do exactly what I wanted, which is an automated scan of some of our most important systems, so we know where the vulnerabilities are. So one of the things I want to do, and I haven't done it yet, is to implement a weekly scan, maybe every Friday.
So you said you got it to do what you wanted to do. What did you find out? Where are we at?
So here's where we need to talk about the plan, because the plan is really important. So the goal of this project, which is something I didn't really define in the beginning, and I didn't tell you what I was trying to do here, but the Center for Internet Security has their top five critical security controls. And one of the things on the list is a weekly vulnerability scan. So every week, you know where you are in terms of your vulnerabilities. Are there new ones? Have we done a patch? Did those go away? Do we still have them? Was the patch installed properly? These are some of the things that vulnerability scanning can help you with. And that's why we have that. Now, we don't have it set up for everything yet. And we don't have weekly scans yet. We haven't implemented that yet. So what I've done so far is to test it to make sure that we have a couple of things. And this is where the plan wasn't fully formed. So what I should have done was I should have told you we were doing this because I'm touching production systems. And that's really important to understand here. Your Raspberry Pi project is just for you. You're learning how to do something with Kali Linux and Raspberry Pis and command and control and all of that. But you have a book that tells you these are the things we want you to do, and you have a process for that already. In my case, I don't have that. I have to come up with that on my own, and then I'm touching, again, production systems. If I make a mistake somewhere, I could damage something that never comes back to life, and then we're dead in the water.
So what are you doing to prevent that or to avoid that? I mean, like, do you have a plan on, okay, let's take a snapshot. How are you doing this so then you can do this OpenVAS thing without screwing up our production network?
So with the Gigabyte server, and I talked about this last episode, mm-hmm. I didn't create a backup like I should have. So in the installation process, if something had gone wrong and I had stepped on top of some service or something that was already configured on the system, that's it. It would have been dead. So that's the first mistake I made, along with not creating an entire plan. So an entire plan would include a beginning, a middle, and an end where we actually achieve a goal. So the beginning would be, okay, how do we justify having vulnerability scanning? And we can give all, and we kind of gave some of the reasons why we have that, right? Right. So when you do a project like this that's going to impact your organization, you're introducing something new. One of the things that they say in IT management and security is that you need to implement something only when it provides some sort of business. There's a business reason for that. It provides some sort of extra functionality or benefit to your organization. So we can say that vulnerability scanning provides us with information about our systems in terms of how secure they really are.
How different is that from Nmap? I mean, Nmap provides you information as well about your system, correct?
And that's a good point. So you're making a counter argument against introducing something that's going to cause us to have to do more work in terms of managing a new process, right? So why don't we just use Nmap? And for some things, Nmap is good. But Nmap doesn't tell you what vulnerabilities you have. It does have the ability to do some vulnerability scanning because you can use Nmap to look for things like WannaCry vulnerabilities within Windows. But it doesn't have the same thing a vulnerability scanner would have in terms of, you know, maybe 100 different things it can scan against a Linux system, 100 different things it might see in a Windows system in terms of vulnerabilities that it knows about and can try to detect within that system. It may not know about, let's say, a Cisco device vulnerability. So those are things that you don't get with Nmap. And then Nmap is only going to scan the outside of the system, With OpenVAS and things like Nessus and Nexpose, you can do authenticated scans where you look at the inside of the system to get a better picture of what you have and what's going on with your vulnerabilities.
And then these vulnerabilities you mentioned last week that were within OpenVAS database. So it has like a collection of vulnerabilities when it gets updated, and then the CVEs, and that's how it tells you, okay, this is vulnerable and this is the CVE behind it. Is that how it works? Or?
Correct. Correct. Okay. So again, we're justifying why we have that. And then you have a process that helps you implement that. But then you also have to have an end goal, right? So the Center for Internet Security says you should be doing authenticated scans weekly. And that's best practice.
So what is an authenticated scan? I mean, help me understand that.
So an authenticated scan is where your vulnerability scanner logs into a particular system. So it may log into our web server, section 9.us, and then see things from the inside of the system and say, okay, you have these things in here. Here's where we see some vulnerabilities. And then it ends up sticking that in the report. It gets a better picture of what you have.
Okay, so within the plan that you're trying to kind of draw up for yourself, you know, are you going to do a checklist of before you implement your plan to protect the system, or is that going to be a part of the plan?
You do need to have some protections in there, and this goes to change management. So let's define our end goal first, right? We want to meet the CIS requirements and pull information from our systems is going to help us. So I want to do authenticated scans once a week. And so that's the goal. I want to try to achieve that. We may get there, we may not, but that's the goal I want to try to achieve.
So what do you have to do to be able to achieve that goal?
So we have to figure out how to install the OpenVAS, which we did. We talked about that last week. But then we also have to do some things that you talked about, which is making sure we have backups. We have a way to put things back if I break something. Because we're talking about production systems, production services. We don't want to interrupt that. So So let's back up here. I would say that last episode was phase one, right? Mm-hmm. Install the application or the service or whatever it is you're working with. In this case, we're talking about OpenVAS. Phase two is making OpenVAS do something. Now, I did a basic scan before, but that's just really basic. I scanned our Synology disk station, and that was okay. But what I really need to do is an authenticated scan with one of our cloud servers. Because those are the ones that I want to really make sure are secure, because hackers have access to that on the internet. They can see those servers. They may have ways of getting in that we don't know about because there may be a vulnerability that we don't know about. So that's why we have that there. And that's why we want to do a weekly scan so we get that information.
So, you know, now that you bring that up, while I was working on my Raspberry Pi project, I was sitting in there and I was thinking, you know, we've been trying so hard to try to implement best practices and the critical security controls. And I'm thinking, you know, are we going in the right direction? And you were saying, you know, I feel like we are. So anyway, I was sitting in there, you know, trying to deal with my S-tunnel issue that I had with that. And, you know, for me being a noob, I was trying to understand it. And one of the things that I did is I went and watched a video that Black Hills put out. And lo and behold, I think somebody was telling me, you need to watch this video because one of the things that we're talking about was exactly what we're doing. They were talking about, know what you have in your network and what have we been doing? Inventory of our devices, documenting some of the configurations and IP addresses and everything that we have. But one of the most important things that I learned from that video, and we can put it on the show notes, the link to it, was... You know how you're talking about doing this OpenVAS with one of our DigitalOcean servers? They were talking about that a lot of people don't know what they have. Not only do they not know what they have in their network, but they have no idea what kind of cloud services they have. And I was really stunned by that fact because, you know, it was then that I was sitting in there thinking, I know why Damien's having us do this. And I know now that we're going in the right direction. Even though when I watched that video, I was trying to understand, okay, if I'm going to be a pen tester, And I'm trying to create this little Raspberry Pi box to be a pen testing box and bring it into, you know, a network and try to do this thing. I need to understand, what does it entail to do a pen test? What is that you do? How do you talk to the client? How do you do the contract and all of that? And when I got into it, I realized a lot of the things that this pen testing people are, and I'm talking about legitimate people that do pen testing, is they're doing exactly what we're doing. They're telling people, okay, we're going to take a look at your network. Are you secure? And one of the things that they said about the vulnerability scanner, for those of us that we don't have the money to buy something really super fancy that is going to do, you know, what you would want it to do, they said it's better to have something than nothing at all. So that kind of made me feel good about that we're in the right track.
And they did list OpenVAS.
Yes, they
on
did.
There, because they had, you know, you made me watch that because you said this is really good. You should watch it. So they had a list of things that they were suggesting as tools that you might be able to use.
Right.
And OpenVAS was one of them. So, you know, we're on the right track.
Yeah. Well, they were saying, well, it's not perfect, but it is better to have it than not having anything at all. But I was really genuinely stunned about how people don't do. I mean, we're nobody really. We're like tiny little network. We're not an enterprise environment. And look at what you're doing just to try to keep production secure.
Yeah. And so having that weekly scan is going to give us that visibility that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
Are our patches working? Are there vulnerabilities that we're missing? Are there extra controls we need to implement to mitigate the risk of having that vulnerability there that wasn't fixed by a patch?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So those are the kinds of things that we're going to learn by doing this weekly. So again, let's go back to our goal here is to do a weekly scan once a week that's authenticated. So knowing that authentication is part of the process, my big issue is this. I'm going to go to a cloud server and I'm going to implement authentication for OpenVAS. Now, we don't have keys or SSH keys on our servers in the cloud. So can I give it a username and password? Well, I don't really want to do that because that's not secure. Recommendation from people in security and even DigitalOcean themselves, they recommend that when you set up a server on their network and you're using SSH, use keys. And they have instructions on how to do that. So I said, okay, keys is part of the process. I'm going to have to implement them. Whether I want to go through this extra work or not, I need to do that. Now I have an issue here, and this goes to what you were saying when we talk about making sure you don't damage the system. You want to have a backup plan. So I'm documenting my process in ITOP to cover our change management process and making sure I have a record of what I'm doing. These are production systems. If I make a mistake, I need to have a record of what I did so that I can go backwards. I can back out of what I've already done. So in this case, I don't want to lock myself out of the system because if I switch to keys right away and it doesn't work, I'm in trouble. The other thing that I do know is that DigitalOcean has this web interface for console access to the virtual machine. So even if I make a mistake and kick myself out of SSH because my keys don't work and I don't have username and password access anymore, I can use that. But I'm trying to avoid that because that's extra work. I've got to log in through their web interface. It's a bit slow. And then I've got to go back out of something. So I want to try to do this in a way that's going to be safe and work for me in this particular situation. So I figured out how to implement keys and I can do it with usernames and passwords as a backup option, right? So if my key doesn't work, the system will fall back to a username and password. And I'm doing this with PuTTY. And PuTTY has their own way of setting up keys. And we'll have to talk about that because you haven't generated keys before, but you can generate keys in PuTTY and you can generate keys within Linux that are more compatible to some of the things that we're going to be working with.
So, well, let me ask you this. When we actually set up our servers using Nginx, didn't they have, I mean, they had a really, when we were securing the server, they had a pretty good outline, DigitalOcean did, on how to do the keys. Why aren't we using that?
So initially, I, you know, we run our Ubuntu servers in the cloud.
Right.
And initially I said no to keys because keys are something that you have to manage. If you don't have access to your key, you can't log in.
Okay, so explain managing keys because I don't know what, I mean, I know what keys do because I read about it, but I really don't have an understanding of how they work. What do you have to manage? How can you run me through that, please?
Okay, so this is something that you know you have to understand because we're going to be using them. And this goes to things like usernames and passwords and managing those. And you manage those in our KeePass.
Yeah.
So what you end up with when you switch to keys is you have a public key and a private key. And then you may also have a password that goes with that private key. Okay. So that nobody else, even if you were to lose your private key, which should be safe and secure on your own system, if you lose that, somebody can't just use that to try to log into one of your systems because they have to put in a passphrase.
So my private key is in my system, like my server?
So this is how it works. You're on your Linux workstation, right?
Okay.
You generate your keys within your command line interface for Linux, right?
Okay.
And you have a private key and a public key.
In my workstation.
On your workstation.
Okay.
So now you want to get the public key onto one of our DigitalOcean servers. That's how this whole process works. So when you SSH into that DigitalOcean server, the system sees that you have a private key locally and a public key out there on the server.
And how does the system see that?
So on the DigitalOcean server, that SSH server is going to see, okay, you're logging in as this user, whatever that might be, Mickey Mouse.
Okay.
Mickey Mouse has a public keys file within their user account.
Okay.
Within public keys, I think that's what they call that. So that's a configuration you have to do. And you're going to copy your public key into that file. And you may have multiple keys in there for various systems that you're going to be logging into or from. So your workstation generates the keys. You put the public key into that public keys file. And then when you log in with your username, let's say it's Mickey Mouse, the SSH server sees that you have a key in there, sees you're logging in with this username, and that username key combination works. And then your private key gets used to help with that whole communications process to authenticate you to that system. Without those keys, it's not going to work properly.
So where is my private key?
The private key stays on your workstation and nobody else should have access to that.
So public key on server, private key on my workstation.
Right. And okay. I will say this, there's more going on there than I can explain.
I know you're oversimplifying it so I can understand it. And I get that.
Well, but that I don't even understand that myself in terms of what other things are happening with the private key and the public key. I'm not entirely sure.
Because I know when I try to do my Gmail, I try to encrypt it by using Mailvelope. I can't remember what it was. I was supposed to have some kind of private key on a website. And I think it was on one of the MIT websites. And then people can get my public key from there. I didn't really understand. You know, kind of, I mean, I watched this video and I was trying to figure out how to do it.
It's similar to that because some of the stuff that you're talking about is the same thing. And that's your, PKI, public key infrastructure. And then you have PGP.
It was PGP.
So in that case, what you have is a public key and a private key. The public key will encrypt data. The private key will unencrypt the data.
Right. And then I had to share that key with my friends, like they would have to go into that MIT website, get my public key to be able to have encrypted email between us. But I found it really difficult and I didn't really understand it. So I just kind of gave up on it at the time. So,
yeah. And so you're seeing similarities here with different things. And to be honest, I don't really understand what's, with the PKI, I kind of get that. With the SSH keys, I'm not 100% sure what's going on behind the scenes.
So again, let's go back to your SSH keys. And I guess you were saying that you were going to do the keys with PuTTY, but not with the DigitalOcean. And, you know, DigitalOcean, I was really impressed when we set up our server because they really did their security well. You know, like what was the one thing that we did that was really, it was really impressive for me, removing root access, you know, for somebody that was,
Yeah. So let's go back to our keys thing here and figure out how we get this to work. So once you have the keys in there in the right place, you know, your private key and your public key, then you can go in and test that. And if that works with the keys, you're safe. But now what you have to do is reconfigure SSHD as a service and say, okay, don't allow anybody to use a username and password. Get rid of that. So now the only way in is if you have a key. So if somebody tries to log in as you and they don't have a key, they're never going to get in. It's never going to ask them for a username and password.
Okay.
You know, you put in the username and they're going to be like, well, where's the password? How do I put that in? It's going to reject you and say, you don't have a key.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the extra piece of security comes into play. Nobody can try to log in as you because they don't have a key. So now what I have to do is set it up so that OpenVAS can access the system with keys. And so there's a bit of a goofiness thing there because I'm on my Windows 10 system. I'm using PuTTY. PuTTY has a key gen thing that you can download and generate your keys. And that works when I'm trying to access my system from Windows 10 using PuTTY because I can just put the public key on there. It works with OpenSSH and everything's good. When I tried to do that with OpenVAS, because now OpenVAS has to have an account on the server, plus it has to have a public key and a private key. So when I tried to use PuTTY to generate all of that, OpenVAS didn't like my private key. No good.
Define didn't like.
You try to upload the private key into OpenVAS, and then you punch in all of your configuration stuff for the credentials to access the server, and you go to save it, and it says no good. And I couldn't figure out if it was the password or what was going on. And when I tried it all different kinds of ways, I realized, you know what? It's probably the private key that's generated by PuTTY is no good for OpenVAS.
Because it's looking at it saying this is not authorized or what?
It's probably in a format that OpenVAS doesn't recognize. So then I said, okay, let's go into our Gigabyte server. We'll create an account for OpenVAS. We'll generate a key as that user, and then we'll use that private key within OpenVAS. And that worked just fine. And then I copied the public key onto the DigitalOcean server. And now OpenVAS has a private key with a passphrase, and it can access the cloud server. So now I can do authenticated scans to our cloud servers and get a better picture of what's going on with that system.
Nice.
And what I can also do now is figure out, once I did that, I had to figure out how to do a scan that would incorporate multiple hosts within that scan. And then I also had to figure out how to schedule that scan. So today I had an automated scan configured to do a test just to see if it would work. And then I had, there is a way when you go into OpenVAS and you create a target, you can actually import a list of hosts. So you can have as a target, you know, all of our DigitalOcean servers as the actual target. So it's going to scan them one by one. And the thing I think I should point out here is that there's a lot of things that I wasn't too sure about, which I think is why I wasn't too sure how to create a plan for all of this. But I managed to think about the right things at the right time so that I didn't step all over myself and create a situation where I got locked out of our servers because keys are enabled and now it doesn't work.
So did you document it?
So I have a document process for that. And DigitalOcean had some instructions for that. And then I had to find instructions for PuTTY to figure out, okay, I got to have this key gen thing. And then it all kind of worked out for me. So in some ways, I got kind of lucky. Because this goes back to some of the things we were talking about before, where we have projects that we're not 100% sure how they're supposed to be implemented, right? And so how do you plan for that?
Yeah.
So by taking this project by in sort of chunks, right? Phase one, do the installation. Okay, I did that. Phase two, figure out how to do authenticated scans. Okay, I figured that out. I did that. Now what we're going to have to do is figure out how to incorporate that information into our overall security process. So now we can go into lessons learned. We're not entirely done with the process yet because I've only incorporated this process with two of our servers. So two servers have been incorporated into OpenVAS for weekly scans. We have to incorporate all of our DigitalOcean servers, which we'll get to that. And then you can see the process, so you can see how keys work.
Right. I think for me, when I work on my project, the difficult part is that I can try to do a checklist, you know, like a real basic one, when I'm trying to do something and then trying to test that it works. That I can do. But if I had to learn OpenVAS, I would have to document it on the go and then go back and make the plan. Because, you know, without being familiar and actually kind of, you know, go out there. And I'd be terrified to do that on a production network like you're doing it right now. I mean, I'm on my test network and I don't really want to even screw up my virtual machine. So, you know, I think it's one of the things that working in IT is so stressful, because there are times that you just have to jump with both feet in and hope for the best and hope to God that you plan things right.
Yeah, that's true. There are certain situations where you just have to jump in and do it,
right,
and hope that your plan is correct.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I could have done in this particular case is I could have said, okay, our DigitalOcean servers are running Ubuntu. Let's build an Ubuntu virtual machine, and then let's connect our OpenVAS with authenticated keys to that virtual machine and test it.
Right.
So that I understand keys and OpenVAS and scanning and authentication and all of that.
Why didn't you do that?
That was not part of my plan. I wanted to try to get that done in the cloud. And I also knew that, okay, our cloud systems, I can snapshot them. So that's one thing that I didn't mention. Before I introduced keys into the system, I did create a snapshot of our DigitalOcean servers.
Nice.
So that's one of the things that I think made me decide to do that, because the real danger was installing OpenVAS on our Gigabyte server,
right,
and not having a backup. That was the biggest issue. Once you have a virtual machine where you have a way to do a snapshot, and you do that, you make a mistake, put the snapshot back. So I think that's why I didn't bother doing it locally.
Right.
In your case, because you're not entirely sure how these things work, you may want to do that. Gives you time to think about what you're doing. And then if you do mess it up, you can just wipe it out and put it back and then start over again.
Yeah, because me not having the experience that you do, if I were to do that and screw it up, I may not be able to go back to what I was doing and try to recreate it, you know, without some help. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So lessons learned here. And let's go back to what I said last episode about the Microsoft updates.
Before you get into that, I have one more question. The Gigabyte server, did you back it up this time?
No, I did not. Because in this case, the service was already there. So I'm not actually messing with other services. The only service I'm messing with is OpenVAS.
Okay. So then it wouldn't affect it. Okay. So I'm sorry. Go ahead about your Microsoft thing that you wanted to say.
So last episode, I talked about Microsoft updates and how OpenVAS might be able to tell you what's going on with any kind of patch, whether that's Windows or Linux or whatever. It's going to show you the vulnerabilities you have. And then if you do a before and after, like you scan before the patch, you scan after the patch, you're hoping to see some of your vulnerabilities go away because you patched, right?
Is that how you can tell that the patch has been applied?
That's one way that you might be able to see if the patch has been applied. Now, there are third-party applications that you can get that may tell you if a patch was installed properly. You can take a look at Windows Update and see if the patch was installed. But then OpenVAS is going to be there to tell you whether or not you are safe and secure.
Okay.
And it may show you that, hey, yeah, you did get some securities or vulnerabilities taken care of, because now they don't show up in your second scan, the one after you put the patch in there.
So you run your scan, you know, first you run your scan. It tells you what problems you have. You do your patches, then you run the scan again. And if you don't have as many, you know, whatever vulnerabilities in there, that means some of those patches did take effect.
They did. And you may be able to go back to Microsoft and find out what those patches were doing. And this is the mistake I made. So last episode, I said that Windows updates are kind of vague and you don't know what's really going on. Well, that's not entirely true. And even you said that you can look at the history and it will show you what patches got installed.
And which ones are successful or which ones have failed.
And that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see what's in there. Now, I'm only going to talk about Windows 10 because that's what we have here at Section 9. We don't have Windows 7. So the interesting thing about Windows 10, and I went into the configuration settings and looked at a bunch of stuff in there. Windows 10 gets cumulative updates. And you've been talking about this for a while because you're the one who does all the Windows updates.
Right.
If I uninstall an update, I may end up getting that anyway because it's cumulative.
Or if you uninstall it, you may screw something up and you may not be able to get other updates that need to have that update in there to be able to take it. So
yeah. So the issue with the updates is, what am I getting? Why am I getting it? Is it going to damage my system? Am I going to break something because I installed this patch? Sometimes that happens. So on the Windows 10 side, it's a little goofy in terms of how you're going to manage all of that. Because if it's cumulative updates, I can't say, no, I don't want that.
Right.
Because I have to have that to get the next one.
So I had a question for you. You know, when you go into the history of the Windows updates and you see the ones that have succeeded and the ones that have failed, if you were to run OpenVAS, you know, do a scan with OpenVAS, on those updates that failed, would it be able to tell you if it's a vulnerability and the CVE on it?
So that's something that we're going to have to sit down and take a look at because I haven't spent enough time to do that.
Okay.
But let's go back to our Windows update
Okay. And
make sure we understand how that works, because that's going to be part of our process here. When you look at the options you have in Windows 10 for your updates, and you talk about cumulative updates,
mm-hmm.
How do you manage all of that? And when I looked at the settings in Windows 10, I found some interesting things. The first thing I noticed was that there's a drop-down menu for a branch, and there's a default one selected. And when you click on it, there's a branch for business. So I'm not entirely sure what that's all about, but that may have something to do with which patches you get and when you get them. So that's something we're going to have to look at. And then if you dig deeper into the settings, there are ways to defer a patch. So you can say, I don't want this patch for the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, up to 30 days. Eventually, you're going to have to get it because it's cumulative. If you don't get that patch, you can't get the one after that. And there was something else in there where you could defer something for 35 days, but I'm not entirely sure. I don't remember what that was. So you do have options, but it's not like Windows 7 where you get to pick and choose. Because in 7, you can check stuff off and say, okay, give me these. In 10, you can't do that. It's all or nothing. They're cumulative.
Right. I mean, you can stop them, but then you will never get any of the updates. You know what I mean?
Right. And if you do that, though, you can't do that within the settings. There's no option in the settings to do that.
No.
You'd have to go and edit something.
Yeah, no, you have to go in and do it a different way. But yeah, for some reason, Microsoft wants the updates to be cumulative and treated like a service.
Right. So when you do your vulnerability scanning, and let's say you're looking at Windows 10 systems, you don't really have a choice in how that happens or when they happen. And in some ways, I think that's good. In other ways, I think it's bad because you may get a patch that breaks something. And what do you do about that? You can't say, I don't want that. So there are some issues there. And then when it comes to, so that's the Windows stuff that we're looking at.
Yeah, but then you can roll it back up to where you, prior to the time that you got that update.
You might be able to do something like that.
No, you do.
So those are things that we have to look at in terms of how we patch our Windows systems. And we don't have a lot of Windows systems, but it's something that we have to think about. So there's that. And that's something I learned because I thought, well, you know, gee, when I said this in the podcast last episode, I don't think that's correct. I think that's goofy. So that's why I was looking into that. And that's why I went and checked our Windows 10 configuration settings. So there's that. And the other thing that I think is really important to understand is that when I did the scan of our Synology disk station, I misread the results. And I said there was lots of red. And it turns out I was looking at the wrong dashboard. And this goes back to, do I understand how the tool works? And in this case, I did not, because I'd never really used it before. We had done scans before, but it's been a while since I've used this particular tool. And so I was in the wrong dashboard. I wasn't looking at the actual results.
Hmm.
But turns out our Synology disk station has a couple of mediums, and then there's a low in there and a bunch of information in there that's marked as log information. So it's just kind of informational stuff that they want you to know. And there's other things about the way OpenVAS does their scans that you kind of have to understand how the tool works in order to understand the results. So one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting is that when I scanned one of our DigitalOcean servers and I got the results back, I thought, something about these results don't look right. And I'm not entirely sure I agree with the results. I'm happy that it came back and there was no red, or there was very little red, I should say. And I'm thinking that there should be more red. So one of the things I'm going to do is join the OpenVAS mailing list, and I'm going to say to people, hey, in these particular situations, when I have this, and I'm going to state what I'm you know, thinking about, what kinds of things do I need to do in terms of configuring OpenVAS to get the best results? Or are these results correct? Will it give me information about these things?
Yeah.
Because I don't understand exactly how OpenVAS checks for a specific item, right? If I have application A, does OpenVAS check for vulnerabilities within that? If not, can I add something to OpenVAS to check for that? Or do I need another tool to help me audit that particular application?
But you said earlier in the last show that how OpenVAS identifies vulnerabilities is due to the database and what's in their library. So would it be a way that you can go and take a look at what's in that library database? And
I don't know. And because I don't know how the tool takes the database and uses it in the vulnerability scanning. Okay. In the way it's configured now, does it use all of that?
Mm-hmm.
Does it incorporate some things to include some of the things I'd like to see more information on?
Right.
Maybe it does, and I just don't have it configured that way. Maybe there's a plugin I have to add in to get it to scan for that particular application.
Got it.
So there's a lot of things about the setup of OpenVAS that I'm not too familiar with. And what does that mean when we look at the results? The results may not be totally accurate because we don't have OpenVAS configured right for our environment.
Right. And then this is the reason why when we were talking about going to SANS training that I said to you, you know, this is a time where you can use to kind of learn how to use your tools, because you don't want to go to SANS training and then while you're doing all this really cool training, you're having to figure out how to use OpenVAS or Nmap or whatever it is that you want to use. You know what I mean?
Right. So those are the two big things that I wanted to cover in terms of lessons learned. So I still have a lot of homework to do. We have a couple of more DigitalOcean servers to add into the mix so that we can scan those. Those need keys,
mm-hmm.
and we have to get them into OpenVAS so OpenVAS knows to scan those systems. And then also, one of the things I did when I did scan the systems, and this is really important, is you need to be careful about how many checks you do all at once. So within OpenVAS, you can say, okay, check 10, 15, 20 different things all at once. Well, when you do that, that puts a burden on the CPU of that system. It uses up resources, RAM, CPU. So when I did that on my test system in the cloud, you know, I picked one server that if it goes away, I'm not too worried about that. I can always put it back with the snapshot. CPU usage went up. And I said, okay, that's 100%, that's not a good sign. Let's back it off a bit. Let's do less checks all at once. And so right now we have it set to 3, and that seems to be a good number. It means the scan's going to take longer, but it's going to use up less CPU, and people can still access, let's say, for example, the web server while I'm doing a scan. And it's not going to be one of those things where it's 100%. Oh my God, now the server just fell over and died because we tried to do too many things at once.
And also, would it make a difference on the time of day that you would do the scan?
Yeah, you want to try to pick a time when you think that most people are not going to be using that particular system.
Have you chosen that time? Do you know what it is?
Right. So we're going to try to do it, once a week, some evening time. You know, we're in Alaska.
Right.
So if we pick some evening time in Alaska, that should be safe. And then, you know, if we talk about people in the middle of the country, someplace else in the world, most likely they're not going to be up at that time trying to access our website.
I don't know, the East Coast and Europe might.
Well, East Coast is going to be sleeping because, you know, if we say, okay, 9 o'clock Alaska time, what is that East Coast time?
Probably 5-hour difference. So
4-hour difference. So, yeah.
Yeah, 1 a.m.
So, yeah, so they're going to be, you know, sleeping. They're not going to be accessing that. So, you know, these are things that we're going to have to play around with and adjust as we use the tool. And again, you know, I'm going to have to join the mailing list and figure out what's going on with some of these scans so that I'm sure that I understand what's really going on.
I'll be curious to see what kind of plan you come up with, you know, the plan, the middle, the end, you know, after you learn the tool and figure everything out.
So the plan is pretty much done. The project is pretty much done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not completely finished because now what we have to do is kind of the cleanup work, right? Add in the last two servers and then all this homework and research on how do we make sure that OpenVAS is configured right for our environment and we're getting the right information.
Well, you still want to do a checklist to secure things or to do the snapshot and to, you know, if the server needed to be backed up. I mean, wouldn't you want to kind of have it some sort of checklist of what to do before you start messing with a tool, right?
Exactly. So we're going to have to do come up with a process for backing up our Gigabyte server, figuring out how we're going to do scans of different systems. So there's a lot of little things that we have to take a look at, some that are not so little, because backing up the Gigabyte server is going to be a bit difficult because it's a physical server. It's not a virtual machine.
Right.
So any other questions you have about the process and what I did?
No. I mean, I'm looking forward to learning about the keys, you know?
Yeah. And that's why I left those other two systems there so we can practice that. We can figure out how do we add keys to these two systems here? And we can do it on two systems so you can see the process a couple of times.
See, for me, I need to do it to be able to understand it, you know, just get my hands on it and then see how it works.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. You know, if I don't get my hands in there and try to do that, you know, you can read about it, but that's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else?
Yeah, actually, I have a little bone to pick with you because we used to be really good about, you know, we have shows that we watch and we used to watch Twit, Windows, what was it?
Oh, yeah, the Windows Weekly.
Windows Weekly. And we've been really not doing that. And I think, you know, we have Windows 10. We need to keep up with the changes and the things that are happening within the system. So I really do think that we need to start kind of planning to put that watching the show once a week somehow into our schedule.
Yeah. And if not Windows Weekly, we need something that tells us something about what's going on with Windows 10 and the updates and different things. So one of the things I'm going to put in the show notes is a link to an FAQ that's on Microsoft's website that kind of gives you some information about Windows updates.
Right.
So that's something. I mean, it's not enough because it's just, I think that page doesn't really get updated that often.
No, that's why I think the Windows Weekly show is a little bit better because they discuss some of the problems that happen, some of the good things about, you know, Windows, you know, what's coming up. Because I read something terrible yesterday. Apparently, Microsoft is ready to up the cost of the workstation to $320. And, you know, I didn't quite get what it was, you know. You know, they're going to do it for some of the workstations. And if you have so many of them, I'm not really sure what it is about. So I don't really want to talk about it, but I really want to find out what's going on.
Well, yeah. And that brings up this issue of making sure you understand your tools, your systems, how they work, how your updates get installed. And that goes back to my reason for wanting to join the OpenVAS mailing list is so that I can ask questions and say, hey, am I doing this the right way? What's going on with OpenVAS? What's new? What changes have happened? What plugins may I need to install for our organization and our situation? So those are the kinds of things that we're going to have to do more of. And that's what makes some of this stuff difficult because you're getting all this information from all these different places and having to figure out what to do with them.
Right. And what applies to what you're trying to do and, you know, what you have. So, no, but I really do miss watching our shows because we had our little IT show time and, you know, now we're so busy. It just seems like we don't really have a lot of time to do some of the things that we wanted to do.
Yeah, but little by little, we're getting to where we need to be because now we're going to be able to check off that part of the Center for Internet Security's critical security controls. And we can say at Section 9, we do vulnerability scanning authenticated vulnerability scanning once a week.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I'm with you there. I mean, and you know, it felt good to know we're in the right track because, you know, for a while when we were kind of trying to decide what do we want to do, it was more like, you know, are we kind of spinning our wheels? Are we doing the right thing? And boy, I tell you what, that Black Hills video brought it home for me. I know we're doing what we're supposed to be doing because some of the things that they were recommending about securing the network, it's something that we're already doing.
Yeah. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing to see that because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you have a question about that. Are we going in the right direction? Sometimes right. you never know. Anything else?
No.
I think we're in a good spot here. So if you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to section9.us. And then if you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.